CSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
The wisdom traditions and rituals of women mystics have been woefully neglected in both literature and in practice in most of the world's major religions. However, there is a fierce and highly informed advocate for the feminine mystical experience, with its emphasis on the value of relationships, feelings, and mutual empowerment over individual success. And that person is our guest today, Maribai Starr. Today she'll be taking us on a special tour of our holy connection to Mother Earth, Divine Mystery, God the Mother, and the many female saints, both present and historic. Maribai Starr has taught philosophy and world religions at the University of New Mexico, Taos, for 20 years, and now teaches and speaks internationally on contemplative practice and the interspiritual dialogue. She's a certified bereavement counselor and travels the world speaking and giving workshops on contemplative practice and the teachings of the mystics. Her books include such critically acclaimed translations as Dark Night of the Soul, St. John of the Cross, The Interior Castles, St. Teresa of Avila, Devotion, Prayers, and Living Wisdom, a six-volume Christian Mystics book series. She's also the author of God of Love, a Guide to the Heart of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and Wild Mercy, Living the Fierce and Tender Wisdom of the Women Mystics. Join us for the next hour as we explore a passionate spirituality through the lens of the feminine with our guest, Maribai Starr. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Maribai, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. It's wonderful to be back with you after several years.
Exactly. It's always wonderful to sit across from you and to be immersed in your work and this most recent work, Wild Mercy. And I would love for you to start by telling us, what was the impetus for this book? What made you decide to sit down and write yet another book, but this one in particular?
All my books have been invitations from different publishers who just sort of track what I'm doing and say, hey, how about this? You know, come up with an idea. I feel very blessed in that way. I also feel sometimes stuck in a little gilded cage, you know, by virtue of the fact that I'm invited to do other people's book ideas. And yet every time I say yes, when I really allow that inner wisdom to be my guide to discern what to say yes to, if I get that, yes, my whole heart and all my creative energy are poured into it, and it definitely becomes mine. It's more true with this book than maybe any other book I've ever done, in the sense that as soon as I receive that inner permission to explore the feminine wisdom voices in all the world's religions, it just opened up this incredibly beautiful world for me. And that world was hidden in plain sight underneath the inner layers of all the world's great wisdom traditions that I've spent my life immersed in exploring through study and through practice. You know, that's what I do. I'm an interspiritual being who has been gleaning and drinking the nectar of all the world's religions for my whole adult life, and never realized until now that there was this whole hidden realm of women's wisdom, and that it really was time to bring it up.
And what I love about this book, you bring in the saints and the many feminine mystics. You know, you talk about your namesake, Mirabai, or Shakti, or Kali, or Julian of Norwich, or Teresa of Avila, or Hildegard of Bingen, or Mother Mary. But you also, what I love, interspersed in this whole volume are what I call present-day saints, mm-hmm. is what I'm calling them. I don't think you actually call them in the book. It's sort of inferred. These are women who are fierce practitioners of feminine wisdom that goes to the deep wisdom of spiritual tradition, mm-hmm. but it's bringing it in a feminine form. And I'd love for you to say something about maybe the difference between the masculine form of spirituality and the feminine form. It can be blurred, but if we could just kind of state it in a little bit of that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a really important and relevant question. And especially, Justine, when we remember that we all contain in our souls and psyches both masculine and feminine and the entire spectrum in between. And so what we're really talking about here when we speak about these feminine attributes in religion and spirituality, we're speaking of that feminine sensibility in all of us, people of all genders. So given that, I would say that these feminine spiritual values, well, let's talk about, you said first, the masculine. The masculine spiritual values are very much about order, prescribed belief systems, rituals, liturgies. It's also very much about transcendence. You know, the masculine, it's like that vertical phallic kind of energy of blasting up and out. And there is an emphasis in all of the world's religions, which were built by and for men, on leaving this world behind, that seeing this world is an illusion to be transcended, seeing the body as a limitation that needs to be purified, seeing the ego and the personality as problems that need to be perfected. You know, that endless self-improvement project that so many of us have been conditioned to engage in and which is constantly thwarted by virtue of just being human beings. So all of that, it's about transcendence. It's about perfection, purification. It's about rigor and order. It's about asceticism and giving up. You know, So the feminine is much more inclusive and affirming of things as they are, of us as we are, that spiritually speaking, we're not too much and we're not enough, which is the thing that most women I know walk around feeling. We're either too much or not enough, or if you're like me, both at the same time. And the feminine is about embodiment. It's about incarnation. It's about blessing every particle of being as holy, as sacred, that this is the place where spirit enters matter and renders everything holy and everything is part of the expression of the presence of the divine. And so our bodies are not these problematic objects that need to be left behind. They are included and they are welcome as the vessels for the sacred in this world.
As you're speaking, I'm remembering something that maybe I read somewhere or someone spoke something about how the angels or maybe the invisible world is cheering us on, because in a physical incarnation, we're able to do things that can't be done in any other incarnation. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I am familiar with this. I think it's in both Judaism and Islam that there, it is said that the humans are the highest form of creation because even the angels have no will. Actually, they can only do what they're told, you know, what they're designed to do. Whereas humans can grapple and wrestle and make it ours, and that there are ways that we can manifest the holy in the world that, right, the so angelic beings cannot.
In that way, then, what you're saying about trying to then get out of this physical incarnation maybe goes against the grain of what we're here for.
Right.
Would that make sense?
So totally makes sense, Justine. That's very insightful. And it reminds me of, I think it's a Buddhist legend about the world. It's as if the world were made all of water, and there is a tortoise that is swimming around in that world of ocean, and she surfaces, and her head goes through a ring that happens to be floating on the surface of this entire globe of water. That's where she emerges, and that's how precious a human birth is.
Oh, I love that image.
Yeah.
I love that image. I would love to talk about, there's something that's very, very popular right now in spiritual circles, and it's the work of non-dualism. And a lot of people are practicing it. It has a lot of beneficial ideas and practices. And you talk about it in a certain way, and I think it really popped for me when I read what you were talking about in non-dualism. There can be a way that we can become non-dualist fundamentalist. I'm using that word.
Yeah.
I'm saying we can be fundamentalist, like we can be really rigid in our idea of non-dualism. I would love for you to talk about non-dualism and how you view it.
Yeah, I think that when any of us who engage in spiritual practices experience at least fleeting moments of unitive consciousness in which we experience all that is as a kind of undifferentiated field of being, you use the word idea, and I think that's the issue here, is that non-duality or non-dualism, which comes from the Advaita Vedanta tradition of Hinduism, is a particular school of thought. It's a philosophical tradition that asserts that reality is fundamentally not two. It's not so much that it is all one. It's a slight nuance on the understanding that everything is connected and all is one. It's more that any notion that we might harbor of ourselves as separate from divine reality is illusion. I totally buy that. Mm-hmm. And I have experienced that in states of deep spiritual practice, kirtan, chanting, meditation. I've experienced it in making love. I've experienced it in watching a baby born. I've experienced it in sitting at the bedside of a beloved who's taking his or her last breaths. So this is our birthright, is to experience these non-dual states. However, there is this movement, you're absolutely right, and it's very popular in the United States and in the Western world, in Europe as well, in which people are adhering to this philosophical system and becoming very rigid around it.
So we're going to talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Mirabai Starr, the author of Wild Mercy, Living the Fierce and Tender Wisdom of the Women Mystics. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, Mirabai Starr. And she spells her last name S-T-A-R-R. There are two R's. MirabaiStarr.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'm here with Mirabai Starr. She is the author of Wild Mercy, Living the Fierce and Tender Wisdom of the Women Mystics. And we're talking about non-dualism, and we're talking about the popular spiritual path right now in the U.S. and maybe also in Europe. And so you were going to say more about that.
So, yeah, as a path, as a spiritual tradition that people are practicing, there is quite a bit of rigidity around this notion that since reality is not two, since we are not separate from God, let's say, let's use the G word here, then anyone who professes anything else is walking an inferior spiritual path and is at a lower level. In other words, there's this understanding in the non-dual movement that any other way is spiritually immature and inferior.
Right.
For instance, the bhakti path or the devotional path. You know, that's Mirabai, my namesake, the 16th century ecstatic poet, was all about longing for Krishna, for union with the God of love, Krishna. And her poetry, her ecstatic love poetry, is among the greatest treasures of the spiritual canon, like the poetry of Rumi or Hafiz.
And or maybe Song of Solomon.
Or Song of Songs. Exactly, yes, right. Justine. That's a wonderful example. So why is it that these ecstatic love poems and all the spiritual traditions sing to our souls so profoundly? Because something in us does feel separate from the beloved, from the source of all love. It feels to me like love is what's missing in the rigid, fundamentalist, non-dual arena. Right. Now, I think that's changing. I have spoken at the Science and Non-Duality Conference a number of times, and they're deeply heart-centered beings who are hungry for the mystics as well.
I agree with you, and I've had some conversations, and I believe it's opening up. And you tell a wonderful story of woman Miranda McPherson, who was rigidly following non-dualism, and she had a profound opening. Can you recall that?
Yes, and I think it was while meditating in Ramana's cave, Ramana Maharshi's cave in India, where she really heard that deep non-dual teaching inside, reverberating inside her own being, saying that really there is nothing, you are not separate. And then she went into this for like a couple of years, I think, this kind of altered state of non-dual consciousness, and she just was abiding, and then her whole life kind of fell apart because she was in this undifferentiated state of consciousness. And she remained that way for quite some time and kind of living in a liminal space when everything fell away. And one day she was, this happened in India, and she had been living in Europe, and then she was back in America and she was running through the woods, you know, doing a run, jogging, I suppose. And all of a sudden, it was like her heart just broke open and the love came flooding back in. I think of Teresa of Avila, who had a very similar experience at the age of 40. I think Miranda might have been around that age too, where her spiritual life had been very dry, very mature, very responsible, but very empty. And then Teresa of Avila also had a momentary experience, do you remember this, where she was just walking through the hallway of the convent and saw a statue of Jesus and kind of caught his eye and noticed this quality of unconditional love and also suffering in him, in his countenance, that just broke her open. And that's when all of Teresa's mystical experiences came flowing in and changed everything. And Miranda's experience was similar. It was like the floodgates opened and this sweetness came rushing in. And she spontaneously began to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Ram, I think it was. And all of a sudden, there was no meaningful difference between the non-dual path and the path of devotion. They merged from the head to the heart.
From the head down to the heart.
Yeah.
to the center of the soul. So
and the body.
And the body. It's the center, soul, body, all of it. It's right there. And that heart, we've learned from like heart math and other science-based thought and research, is that the heart has an intelligence.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's what's been missing in the mindfulness movement in many ways, in several other Buddhist arenas and in the non-dual path, is the heart, is feeling, is body, is poetry, is the feminine.
And I'm thinking of your own story too, Mirabai, going back to your story that you've told in other books, and now you repeat a little bit in here. It's not the emphasis of the whole book, but you mention your profound change that happened when your beautiful young daughter passed away suddenly in a car accident. And in this book, you describe, first of all, that grief doesn't have a timeline. You know, it doesn't have an expiration date, that, and then we get impatient sometimes with each other and we say, oh, they should be over it now. And you talk about some years after her death, you were in India and you were with Mataji, who inherited the work of Neem Karoli Baba, the famous guru of Ram Dass and Larry Brilliant and others. And you had a profound moment with her. Can you describe that?
Yes. So Neem Karoli Baba is my guru, and he has been a lifelong presence for me. And Jenny and I, my daughter and I, had always planned to go to India together when she graduated from high school. And she was killed in a car accident the first year of high school. So I promised her that I would still fulfill that dream together. And it took me a long time. So she died in 2001. And in 2010, I finally made my way to Kenshi Ashram in the foothills of the Himalayas, where Maharaji was, and where Sri Siddhi Ma, Mataji, was still living. She just died a year ago, by the way. The end of December of 2017. Yeah, just almost 2018. Mm-hmm. And so I went to see her. She had invited me when Jenny died, and it just took me that long to get it together to go. And so it was the 9th anniversary of Jenny's death when I was there at Kenshi Ashram. And Mataji, there was something about being in her presence. She was, and still is, if you believe in these things, which I do, the essence of feminine wisdom. She was fierce, and she was also unconditionally loving. And she just took me into her arms, so to speak. She didn't physically embrace me, maybe a little, but mostly it was that she just made herself fully available to me. She looked at me, she saw me, and I felt seen in the way I've never felt before. I spontaneously prostrated at her feet, even though philosophically, growing up in an agnostic Jewish family, that's like not my first impulse. And yet the devotional response that she generated in my heart just by being in the field of her presence dispelled all my opinions on the matter, and I just took refuge at her feet in such a way that it changed everything. And I will always feel now that she is part of my spirit team. It's like, Justine, that's what I noticed with this book, writing this book. It's like gathering my girls, you know, all of these mystics and saints of times past, all of these goddesses from across the spiritual traditions, and all of the people that I love who have died. It's like my daughter, when she died, became my ancestor. And she's now part of that spirit team that holds me and guides me. And Mataji is very much part of that.
I love that idea of a spirit team. And that also takes me to the idea you spoke about growing up, this Jewish tradition, and also all the paths that you have participated in throughout time. I mean, you really have done a lot and dipped into the well of many wisdom traditions. And so some people would say, oh, Mirabai, you're just a dilettante, and you're just wandering around from this one to that one, and it doesn't mean anything. And I want to read something from your book that just blew my socks off, because this is a quote from the book. And when you're talking about following many paths and being tagged as a dilettante, and they even, you know, people are saying, oh, well, you're not going deeply. You need to do one path. And here's what you say. You say, as if your polyamorous spiritual proclivities render you a dilettante, they will mistakenly judge your way as superficial and undisciplined rather than as the mind-blowing, heart-openingly, soul-transfiguringly rigorous spiritual practice that it is. Mm. I love that. So I loved it that you're saying just because you're pulling wisdom from different wells doesn't mean that you're not rigorous in your practice.
That's right.
So please comment on that if you would.
Yes, I'd be happy to. And I've spoken a lot about this in, you know, in interviews and in print, that I had a kind of awakening around that when, I don't know, right around the time I was writing God of Love, that the message I'd received my whole life on the spiritual path, and I started on a serious spiritual path at 15, was that you have to pick one tradition and go deep if you really want to have a transformational spiritual experience and a profound and mature one. And that it took me until I was, you know, in my 40s to realize that that message was divisive and untrue, and that I had been all along having deep, profound, transformational experiences in multiple sacred spaces and religious traditions, and that that is the way my soul happens to be built, as many of you who are listening can resonate with, that your heart has always responded to the wisdom, to the nectar across the spiritual landscape, and that you're incapable of just picking one place to the exclusion of any of the others, that that's just temperamentally how some of us are. I mean, I like to think it's evolution, too, that we're evolving beyond these strict parameters of religious institutions, and that our hearts are naturally, our souls are naturally opening and responding to the presence of the sacred everywhere. Because I happen to feel, Justine, and I'd be curious to see if you agree, that the existing religious structures, which are almost entirely patriarchal, are crumbling anyway. And attempting to prop them up right now is not only futile, but kind of unattractive. That what's happening is this much more expansive, inclusive spiritual orientation that many of us have. It's kind of like gender fluidity. Yes. This is the direction that our souls are going in.
I'm here with Mirabai Starr. She is the author of Wild Mercy, Living the Fierce and Tender Wisdom of the Women Mystics. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, mirabaistarr.com. And she spells her name Mirabai, M-I-R-A-B-A-I, Mirabai Starr, S-T-A-R-R, mirabaistarr.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Here with Mirabai Starr. She's the author of Wild Mercy, Living the Fierce and Tender Wisdom of the Women Mystics. And we were just talking about tapping into the many, many different wisdom traditions and tapping into that deep wisdom that is contained within them all and having this multiplicity of expressions, which is so wonderful. And I can think of one thing that maybe is important in all of them. You talk about this a little bit in your book, and I love the way you express it, because it comes from a Buddhist perspective, but you take it far beyond that. And this is the three jewels that are important in